passions. Great is our sin. I did not follow my initial inclination, and I am sure that I made the right decision, because I knew damned well that my work would then be misshelved to oblivion in the religion section of many bookstores, as my volume of evolutionary essays, The Flamingo's Smile, ended up in the ornithology division of a great Boston institution that shall remain nameless. Things can always be worse. I once, in an equally prestigious Boston emporium, found a copy of that 1960s undergraduate manifesto, The Student as Nigger, on a shelf marked Race Relations. My friend Harry Kemmelman, author of the marvelous mystery series featuring theological sleuth David Small, told me that his first entry in the series, Friday the Rabbi, once appeared in a list of children's titles as Freddy the Rabbit. But tables do turn occasionally. My buddy Alan Dershowitz told me that a woman successfully acquired his chutzpah by telling the bookstore clerk, I want a copy of that book whose title I can't pronounce by the author whose name I can't remember. I eventually decided on The Mismeasure of Man because the essence of my book, in a paradoxical way that conferred staying power over these 15 years since initial publication, lies in its limitation of scope. The Mismeasure of Man is not fundamentally about the general moral turpitude of fallacious biological arguments in social settings, as my original and broader title from Darwin would have implied. It is not even about the full range of phony arguments for the genetic basis of human inequalities. The Mismeasure of Man treats one particular form of quantified claim about the ranking of human groups. The argument that intelligence can be meaningfully abstracted as a single number, capable of ranking all people on a linear scale of intrinsic and unalterable mental worth. Fortunately, and I made my decision on purpose, this limited subject embodies the deepest and most common philosophical error, with the most fundamental and far-ranging social impact, for the entire troubling subject of nature and nurture, or the genetic contribution to human social organization. If I have learned one thing as a monthly essayist for more than 20 years, I have come to understand the power of treating generalities by particulars. It is no use writing a book on the meaning of life, though we all long to know the answers to such great questions, while rightly suspecting that true solutions do not exist. But an essay on the meaning of 0.400 hitting in baseball can reach a genuine conclusion with surprisingly extensive relevance to such broad topics as the nature of trends, the meaning of excellence, and even, believe it or not, the constitution of natural reality. You have to sneak up on generalities, not assault them head on. One of my favorite lines from G.K. Chesterton proclaims, "Art is limitation. The essence of every picture is the frame." My chosen title did get me into some trouble, but I make no apologies and relished all the discussion. The Mismeasure of Man is an intended double entendre, not a vestige of unthinking sexism. My title parodies Protagoras's famous aphorism about all people and also notes the reality of a truly sexist past that regarded males as standards for humanity and therefore tended to mismeasure men while ignoring women. I stated this rationale up front, in the original preface, so I could always use unthinking criticism as a test to see who liked to mouth off without reading the book first, like Mr. Dole criticizing the violence in movies he has never seen and would not even deign to watch. I don't, of course, mind criticism of the title based on disagreement with my stated rationale. In any case, my title allowed my colleague Carol Tavris to parody my parody as a name for her marvelous book, The Mismeasure of Woman, and I am at least mightily glad for that. The Mismeasure of Man resides in a threefold frame, a set of limitations that allowed me to contain one of the largest of all intellectual subjects within a coherent and reasonable comprehensive narrative and analysis. 1. I restricted my treatment of biological determinism to the most historically prominent and revealingly fallacious form of quantified argument about mentality, the theory of a measurable, genetically fixed, and unitary intelligence. As I wrote in the introduction to link the pseudo-scientific claim with its social utility, this book